It's Reefer Madness, the podcast with Trevor and Kirk.
Kirk, we're back.
Hey, Trevor, how's it going?
It's going well.
Several weeks we haven't been in the studio, man. I haven't seen you.
No, we've been different places doing different things. You know, this little COVID-19 thing came up.
Yeah.
So, but Kirk, I'm thinking you really have an interview. All our interviews are fantastic, but not too often you get to talk to a childhood hero.
I've been walking around for the last 2 weeks, going up to people and saying, hey, listen to this.
Hi, I'm David Crosby, and you're listening to Reefer Madness, the podcast.
Yeah. No, Renee sent me that almost as soon as you guys finished. That is... You know, that should be your new ringtone.
It could be. David Crosby. I got to speak to a gentleman that I first met in 1975, 76.
So it's been a while.
It's been a while,
40-ish
yeah.
years.
Yeah.
So I think most people out there know Dave Crosby's a musician. They've heard of Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. They might have heard of The Byrds. You even had me watch a biopic so I could... get a little bit more into the life and times. But how does David Crosby fit into cannabis?
Oh, that's a big question. That's a big question I asked him. Essentially, David Crosby, right? Two-time inductee to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. 1991 with the Byrds, 1997 with Crosby, Stills, and Nash. I've been all things David for the last 2 weeks. I mean, I've been all things David for 40 years off and on in my growth with music. Driving to the studio the day that we're scheduled to talk to David Crosby, I kept saying to myself, geez, how do I do this? How do I do this? Do I be the gobsmacked fanboy, or do I be the deep, dark, subjective, history-gathering nurse that friends know me so well as? I was afraid, do I scare him off on both spectrums, right? David Crosby, I read your chart. The man meets all three of the tenets the pillars that we went into this podcast for, right? The Reefer Mellow, right? 65 to 75, Crosby's mellow, hippies, top of the musical pop charts. He is pop royalty in those 10 years. 76 to 86, the man's reefer madness. The guy has taken, you know, the entry drug, cannabis being the entry drug, and taken it to a whole new spectrum, right? He ends up in a Texas jail, right? 8 to 12 months, depending on the reference. David Crosby is quoted several times as saying he's been in jail for 12 months. His wiki page says he was in jail for eight months. Essentially, weapon charges, narcotic charges. He's in a Texas jail. This is a broken man who's gone to jail because of his drug addiction. Stepping today in the new millennium, now he's reefer medicine. So I see David Crosby as such a source for us in the sense of we've got his mellow, we've got his madness, and we've got his medicine.
Yeah, no, and the biopic was, thank you, actually. It was really good to do that biopic before we did the interview. And yeah, and I don't want to spoil too much, but this is a wide-ranging interview. You guys definitely talk cannabis, but you talk politics, you talk insulin, you talk liver rejection drugs. Like he's a bright guy.
He and he's well-spoken, and he was very kind to us. I'm very serious. You know, we all discover music around 13 to 15, and they say you go back to that music. When I was 14, 15, I discovered Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and those four musicians and their pedigree and every family tree they had. Crosby's voice at the time was what I thought glued the three voices. I mean, Stills, you know, the rough and ready sort of bluesy voice, and you got Graham Nash with that beautiful high harmony. And then David Crosby's voice just brought it all together. And his songs to me were the more deeper thinking songs of the time. So yeah, I have followed David's career. For me to talk to David at this time in his life where he is now lucid, very lucid, as you say, and very kind. It was a fantastic, fantastic conversation. Should we get into it?
Let's get into it.
It's Reefer Madness, the podcast.
David Crosby, I've read your chart, man. My first question for you, did you ever think you'd see the day did you ever think you would live long enough to see the legalization of cannabis?
No. No, absolutely not. I mean, I come from, you know, I've been smoking it for 50 years. So when I started, you know, it was the really dim old dark ages. I am really happy to see it, though, because I've seen people who were in jail for, you know, two or three joints or something like that. And it just seems totally wrong, you know. So, yes, it's an enormous step forward. And no, I never thought I'd see the day.
Very cool. Can you speak to how your relationship with cannabis has changed over the decades?
Well, it started out, I just was curious, you know, because the other musicians that I was with were doing it. And I said, hey, well, let me try it. And I liked it. Then there was a long period of time that it was, you know, just how you did it back then. We got terrible, terrible stuff, and it barely got us high. But eventually, it grew into a really good thing. I got sidetracked into hard drugs, and it took me, you know, many, many years to get out of there. And then I did about 15 years sober to make up for that, to get myself away from that. And then I started smoking pot again because it had stopped snapping at my heels and I felt comfortable with it. And then it started to expand. Then we found out that there were a whole lot more compounds in the pot, that there was CBD, that there were terpenes, that there were all kinds of other things in there. And, at least one country, I think it was Israel, started making it possible to study pot. And then we really started to find out more about it. And so my relationship to pot changed as it went along. And my relationship to the CBDs and the medicinal stuff, you know, obviously didn't start until we knew about them, which was just last week. It was a couple of years now. But you're going to think I'm crazy, but I think the medicinal stuff of marijuana, and I don't think we've found out anywhere near all of it yet, may in the long run be bigger than the getting high part of marijuana. The reason I think that is this. Painkillers, right, the ones we have, the NSAIDs and the opioids, that's our two main groups, right, have terrible side effects, opioids especially. You get strung out. It's death. They're absolutely a bad thing. But you need them if you're in terrible pain. But they're really not a good thing for you. Okay. So, and the NSAIDs aren't good for you either. They're bad for your kidneys and they're not good for your liver. So here we come with CBDs. If this new family of, it's a mild painkiller, but when I think everybody gets done with concentrating it and refining it and, you know, as it's refined and made stronger, eventually they're going to be able to drop, you know, the equivalent of an ibuprofen, you know, 500 in your hand, and it'll work. And it doesn't have the side effects. So far, it doesn't have any known side effects that are bad at all, which is a freaking miracle. Half of the people in America are in pain right now. From one thing or another, if it isn't their busted toe, it's where they banged their head. And if we can come up with and supply another painkiller family that doesn't have those bad side effects, well, you're changing millions and millions of people's lives.
Yeah, that's fantastic. We're on the same page with that. So you sort of lead me into the next question. You're a medicinal user of cannabis now. Are you working with health professionals? I mean, your health issues over the decades is well publicized. So are you working with health professionals? So you're dosing. How are you determining your dosing?
I do that by myself. I'm, you know, as a 50-year pot smoker, I pretty much have got down what I want and how I do it. But my healthcare professionals, which are some of the top line in the country, are fully aware of what I do, and they approve. You know, they know that everything that you know about it, they know about it, and they are anxiously awaiting its arrival as a legitimate competitor to the existing system.
And I find that fascinating because, you know, there are, as you probably know, there are this branch of healthcare providers, doctors, that say there's not enough research for cannabis. Then you've got this other branch of health providers saying, go for it, man. What's the worst thing that can happen? So you're working with people. Yeah.
When you have people say not enough research, well, do some more research.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's been difficult to do research in the United States of America because we have a backward and stupid government. Our stupid government has it still classified along with the class five drugs. The big, you know, marijuana is classified the same as heroin.
Yeah.
It's a goddamn joke. And so nobody could work on it. Israel, however, had a much saner set of laws. And so a lot of the research on cannabis has been being done in Israel. And some of the leading experts in the world on cannabis are in Israel.
You know, it's funny, David, in Canada, we are legal for recreational and medicinal. But when we talk to researchers, they're finding it really, really difficult to do research on cannabis in our country because of the politics and that's happening. So here we've got two countries, your country that it's illegal and it's considered a narcotic and it makes it difficult. We're legal and it's still difficult.
Well, I think it's going to change. I think it's going to change in Canada because you have an inherently saner system than we do.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to change everywhere for this reason. It's going to change in every state in the United States. I can guarantee you that, and soon.
Yeah.
And it's going to do it because in the United States, we pay in tax money, income tax mainly, but all kinds of tax money. It goes into the federal government. Some of it gets transmitted by the federal government back down to the states for health, education, welfare kind of stuff. Now, that pipe from the federal government down to the states has always been constricted, and it's always been difficult, and the states have always been hurting for money. That pipe now is constricted even more because our government does not want to send any money down that pipe to black people or brown people or young people or old people or really any people except themselves. So now all those states are hurting. They're always hurting for money, okay?
Right.
Except Colorado and Oregon, and they're looking at Colorado and Oregon, and Colorado and Oregon men can buy a school or a road or a hospital today.
Yeah.
Not even next week. Today. They can sign the check today, and it will not bounce.
And is
they
that
can buy anything they need. They can take care of the people in their state. Now, that's state-controlled tax money. State-controlled
right.
tax money. And it's billions with a B. So I guarantee all those states, all of them, every single one, doesn't matter anything about the posturing and posing that they're doing right now, all of them will legalize it because they need the money.
So what is Colorado and Oregon doing that California is not? Because it's legal in California too, right? Recreational and medicine?
California too now.
Yeah.
California too now. But they were all, you know, the initial pair were Oregon and Colorado, and they're ahead of us.
Right.
You know, they did it sooner, and they've got it worked out better. California's going that way. But California had a lot of money already, so it's not as good an example. But I guarantee you, man, every state, states that are just as red as you can imagine, they're going to legalize it. No matter what they said, they're going to legalize it because they need the fucking money.
Wouldn't it be ironic if the current administration, federal administration, was the one that signed the bill? Like, you're involved with NORML, right? The organization working to reform marijuana laws in America.
Yes, I am. Yeah.
So, are you getting any of your information from them? Like, isn't Trump's administration threatening to actually sign it? Because it's in the Congress now, isn't it?
Yes, there's a tremendous pressure on them for them to do it, and here's why. You're going to like this. You know what's really pressuring them to do it? They're really pissed that all the money's going to the Canadian banks.
Yeah, of course. It's greed.
Yeah. Isn't that dumb?
Yeah.
They are. Right now, all the cannabis money is getting banked in Canada.
isn't that something?
All the big, I mean, Canopy and all those big outfits, they're all based out of Toronto, man. My lawyer that works in cannabis is out of Toronto. Because you guys were smart ahead of time, you scooped the business right up there. And they're pissed. The people who run money in this country want that money in their bank.
Yeah.
They don't care where it came from. They want it. And so they are pressuring the federal government to legalize it right away, and it's mainly because of that, mainly because of the money.
When we were traveling through Colorado about a year ago and made it down to Arizona, and I did a couple interviews in episodes out of there, and they were telling me that they were basically taking cash, like real cash, into credit unions. So a lot of the state businesses were dealing with credit unions because they couldn't deal with the national bank. So they just had this cache of money they couldn't dump.
Yeah, they have tremendous amounts of cash.
Yeah.
And it's costing them money to have cash because that means they have to have guards. They want to legalize it. The states want to legalize it. The feds want, because of the banking, want to legalize it. I don't think there's any question it's going to happen. I don't any question. It's for the wrong reasons. It should be legalized because people shouldn't go to jail for smoking pot. It's like drinking beer.
Completely agree.
And it should be legal because it can help people. If you saw what it can do for somebody with Parkinson's, you would be really pissed at anybody trying to keep it illegal.
You know, I grew up on the West Coast, so I grew up in Victoria on Vancouver Island in the West Coast of Canada. So we were in the 70s a little
you
further.
Lucky fucker.
Yeah, I know. And now I sit in the center of the continent. But in those days in the 70s, we had access to Maui Waui, we had Thai Stick, we had Colombian Gold, we had really good weed back in the 70s. And I was thinking, you know, would I live long enough to see this? What I find so interesting, David Crosby, is I'm talking to an old hippie that now you're involved with federal organizations to change the laws in your country. That must excite you.
Yeah, it does. I like change. I think change is good, and this particular change has been needed for a long time. It is exciting to me to see it happen. I don't want people to not be able to get a medicine that they should be able to get. I don't want people to go to jail for something they absolutely shouldn't go to jail for.
Yeah.
And I don't think we really, and this is, now I may be, this may be, you know, me being hopeful, but I don't think so. I think that we haven't even really yet figured out half of what this plant can do.
Yeah.
And I think we need to go a hell of a lot deeper into the research and find out what it can do. There is substantial indication that it may reduce tumors. If that's true, then you're talking about cancer.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's serious.
Can you,
we need, it's a very, very active bunch of chemicals, and it needs to get studied really heavily and right now.
Yeah, the skeptic in me wonders how a plant that grows in my backyard is going to be allowed to cure cancer when cancer is such a money-making commodity. So it's like...
Well, you know, there is that, and trying to go up against big pharma is tough.
Yeah.
You know, but... You know, there are things that trump all of Big Pharma's, you know, positioning, like aloe vera. They can't do aloe vera as well as you can by simply cutting off a piece and slicing it open, putting it right on the burn that you just got.
Right.
They simply can't extract it and make it and sell it to you better than the plant can do it for free. So maybe we'll see some effect on them, too, which would be fine with me. I don't like how Big Pharma in the United States works. I think, you know, geez, I mean, they're so blatantly, unbelievably greedy. You know, the medicine that I took to get rid of my hepatitis C was $1,000. It was like 40 pills at $1,000 a pill. It was a little medicine ball. It was $40,000.
Astounding, eh? And you're obviously with your transplant patients, you're obviously still on pharmaceuticals, anti-rejection drugs and that sort of stuff. So that's all part of
Yeah, very mildly I am, yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm also diabetic, and to know that what costs me over $300 here in the United States costs me $30 in Canada. That's really rotten, man. They shouldn't be doing that to us. We're sick people and we don't deserve it.
It's not the point of this podcast to get into politics, but I don't understand why your country's so afraid of Bernie. I mean, Bernie would make a great prime minister of Canada.
I'm not afraid of him. I voted for him.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the establishment is afraid of him a great deal because he wants to roll it back and have it aimed at providing stuff for the people rather than providing stuff for the corporations.
Yeah.
Right now, corporations run the United States of America. They got it. Citizens United made it possible for them to pour any amount of money they needed into to control the country, and they do. Period. That's it. But it can change. and Bernie represents that change, and so they are terrified of him. That's why I voted for it.
Perfect. David Crosby, let's go back to your use of cannabis medicinally. In your world, explain to me how cannabis makes your day a wellness plan. How do you use cannabis as a wellness plan in your day?
Well, I find that I can't be awake and bake. I have too much to do in the daytime. So I'm out here, I'm outside of my doctor's office where I'm taking my wife, and she's got a cast on her leg because she broke her ankle, and I'm doing that kind of stuff. And then I'm going to go to the grocery, and then I'll go to the cleaners, and then I'll, you know, that kind of thing, drugstore, all that regular stuff that you do in your day, right? Long about evening, well, then I like to, you know, get high and make dinner and, you know, hang out with my family. And then I take a guitar off the wall and get a little bit higher and see if there's some music out there calling for me. And that happens every night. I'm either trying to write lyrics or I'm trying to, you know, write music every single night. And I vape weed that we grow ourselves. Flowers in a little pack three, you know, it does flowers rather than extract and stuff. I think the extract and all that shatter and all that is good, but some people do it better than others, and I prefer to just smoke the flowers that we raised. I like it better that way. I vape the flowers that we raised. I like it better.
Nice. Yeah, and do you guys bake with it as well? Do you make edibles?
Yeah, we do, yeah. My wife has come up with a ginger snap that is the superior ginger snap of my life. I've never tasted a better one anywhere ever.
Isn't that cool?
And you can't taste the pot, but it definitely works.
Isn't that cool?
My son makes brownies. My wife makes ginger snaps.
That's very cool. We did the same thing. Michelle and I sat down. We were doing some cooking, and we're, you know, tasting the batter and stuff. I said, you know, it's got that earthy taste. It's got that cannabis. Let's put a little cinnamon in and see how that balances it out. Cinnamon double chocolate cookies, man. Unbelievable.
I bet they're great. You're absolutely great.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, we do both.
Yeah, fantastic. The Mighty Cross, you're branding yourself now. You're branding yourself in the new millennium as the Mighty Cross. Can you explain your branding to us? What is it that your hopes, your vision of the Mighty Cross?
Well, we hope that we're going to have, I think probably, we'll probably have a CBD hookup first because it's legal all over the country right now, so we can. And then I think we will have a pot company as well. The Mighty Cross is a strain of pot that I have that's very strong. Very, very strong.
This is something you're growing
and,
in your garden?
Yep.
Oh, cool.
But in the long run, we can grow it commercially, and it's very good. in the long run, I think we will try. What we're trying for, man, is to work out a deal with a pot company where they use my name and face to sell, you know, all of their products, CBDs, pot, everything. How that's gone is nowhere near how we expected it would go. The expectation was that you know, celebrity brands were going to be the thing, and everybody jumped on it. Well, if you look at the two leading ones, Willie's and Snoop's, they're not generating a whole lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't go the way we thought it was going to go. They will generate money in the long run, but they didn't take off like a house of fire, which is what everybody thought they were going to do. So that's made it much more difficult for me to make a deal for my name and face to be on fronting for a pot company. I think that that's only a matter of time. I think we just have to be patient. We've been sorting through a lot of companies and looking for intelligence, looking for long-range vision, looking for good business practice, looking for ability to communicate, looking for qualities that we think make a company attractive to us to join up with. Because if we commit, then we seriously commit. And then I bring, well, I got a lot of access to media. I mean, a lot.
Yeah.
I've got, you know, 150,000 people on Twitter and probably a million on Facebook. And, you know, that helps.
Yeah. In preparing for this interview, I talked to your buddy Steven, and he was saying to me, one of your goals is you want to be seen as an educator and helping people of a generation with cannabis. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, I have a kind of a longer perspective than they do because I've been doing it for, like I said, more than 50 years. You know, I don't think that it's my place to preach to everybody, but I do think if somebody asks, I can give them good advice about how to manage it. Somebody says, I think it's really cool to wake and bake. I can say, well, that's great for you. If for those of us who have shit to do in the day, I recommend that you wait until evening. You know, there's a certain viewpoint that comes to you after this amount of time.
So you're going to go out and educate people and help people understand how it can help them?
No, I'm going to go out and do tours and play music.
Okay.
but this is part of it. This okay. is part of my relationship to weed. Is yeah, I don't mind giving advice to anybody about anything. You don't have to take it.
Okay. Can I ask you something to clear up a little bit? Does pop culture, of course, I'm a study of it. I'll confess to you, I discovered you as a 15-year-old boy. I bought the So Far album, and then I went out and bought all the albums of all four of you. You know, your album, your first album, just blows my mind. Can you fill in a little bit of pop culture for me? Would you mind doing that if I ask you a question about...
No, go ahead.
Yeah.
Fine.
Okay.
You can ask me anything you want.
Ian Tyson, great Canadian, wrote Four Strong Winds. He wrote Four Strong Winds because Bob Dylan challenged him. Bob Dylan's running all this original music. Ian Tyson wrote his very first song, Four Strong Winds, powerful song. He credits himself for introducing Bob Dylan to weed back in the day. Now, of course, Bob Dylan is credited to introducing the Beatles to weed. Now... you're credited being an influencer of the day and in the sense of how you influence pop artists. How did you fill into that? How did you help pop artists find good weed? How did you do that? What was your role in that? I mean, we're talking 50 years ago, so.
Bob may have turned him onto weed, but Bob didn't have really good weed. I did. So, When we became friends, they were very interested in the birds when we went over there the first time. They were very kind to us. They came and saw our shows. They took us to their houses. They drove us home from gigs. They hung out with us, and it was a very good relationship. And I had much better weed than anybody in England. A friend of mine had just come back from Africa to London and had African weed that was just stunningly good, and they had never had it. And they were still at the stage where you take some hash and break it up and put it on some tobacco, you know, which is really a terrible way to get high. And I had actual weed that was really do what it's actually supposed to, and that was a total thrill for him.
That's fantastic. Thanks for sharing that. Is there a question I didn't ask you? Is there anywhere you wanted to take this conversation that I neglected to ask a question? Something you want to
no,
share?
No, I think you were very thorough.
Thank you for the music, mate, and thank you for your time.
All right, man. Take care of yourself.
So what do you think?
Like I was saying in the intro, I was impressed with how bright and well-versed this guy is. You know, you guys talked about taxes in Colorado,
yeah,
prices of insulin, red states versus blue states, why you should vote for Bernie. He's a bright, knowledgeable guy.
Yeah, he's been around cannabis a long time, right? He's a wonderful addition to our library. I often think about the '80s and when Crosby was in the dark hollows of the lies of addictions, and how his contemporaries at the time were throwing out and trying to help him and commenting on him. He was kicked out of two bands, right? He was kicked out of the Byrds, and he was literally, I guess, fell away from Crosby, Stills, and Nash in his addictions. And now he seems to have pissed everybody off because he speaks his mind. So I guess, you know, the hippie dream with the 60s and the 70s, and for those out there that are Neil Young fans, you might know the song Hippie Dreams, circa 86, 89, Landing on Water, I believe is the album. You know, and he described David Crosby as another flower child goes to seed in an ether-filled room of meat hooks. It's so ugly. It's so ugly. That's David Crosby in 86, 89, right?
But let's bring him back to the present. You know, we've all got our demons, some bigger than others. He seems to have his demons at bay, and he's now trying to help people with cannabis.
Yeah, that I tried to get him into that conversation, and I liked the way he answered it. No, I'm just going to play music, man. But one of the things is that is people were telling me as I was preparing for the interview was that he really is trying to be a new role model, and I'm excited to see what happens with his Mighty Kroz. I found it interesting that he was saying that, you know, all the celebrities got on the bandwagon and how they're not necessarily selling the weed they thought they would, and how he's sort of hanging back and waiting for the proper company to put his face on a brand of weed. I'm anxious to smoke it. I'm also anxious to meet the man. There's an open invitation for us to meet him if he comes near us or if we're near him. So David, you will be meeting the redheaded nurse eventually.
So a few just, you know, picky pharmacist details.
Yes.
We were talking a little bit, you and him, about ibuprofen. And this just because I'm a pharmacist. So he's talking about it being hard on the liver.
Yeah.
It's not. It's Tylenol that's hard on the liver. If you take too much ibuprofen, it's hard on the kidneys and stomach. Yeah, small detail because, frankly, it got just about everything else right. The other one you guys touched on a little bit, but worth mentioning, he's a liver transplant patient.
Yeah.
And CBDs do a lot of stuff in the liver. Like if you go back to when we were talking to the toxicologists and, you know, their rats were livers on legs, CBDs definitely affect the liver. And I'm sure he's got very bright people checking all his liver levels all the time, but that's just an interesting thing. If the CBDs are making the liver enzymes work more, how is that affecting somebody who's a liver transplant? And I think the short answer is we don't know, but I am assuming he's being monitored closely on that.
Well, that's episode 33, by the way, Liver Let Die. That's one of our episodes. I thought about that too. You know, as I was talking to him, there's so many questions that I wanted to go deeper on. But the thing I would like to do is talk to his doctors about the whole cannabis and liver thing, because that's the thing we've tried to suss out in past episodes. How is cannabis metabolized? Here we have a guy that's a liver transplant. So he's taken anti-rejection drugs, right? He says he took a few. He takes a few. Well, I'm sure there's a handful of them because
it's a handful.
It's a handful. So he's taken a fair bit of pharmaceuticals just so his body doesn't reject the liver. And he did spend that 12 years that he spent dry and leaving his body clean of any sort of intoxicant, and now he's back on reefer. He's a celebrity, but I'd love to track him as a patient. You know, I'd like to say, hey, David, can we call you in 4 years and talk to your liver guys? How's it going?
And just again, two other, because I'm a geeky pharmacist, insulin Canada versus the US.
Yeah.
It comes up in my line of work fairly often, but had you heard this before? Because this is fairly famous in pharmacy world that literally the same box of insulin that costs $30-ish dollars here costs $300 south of the border.
Yeah.
That's bananas.
Yeah. Wasn't there a few years ago the whole internet pharmacy craze when Americans were buying from us a lot of their...
Yeah, but that was a different thing. That was getting close to 15 years ago now. This is within the last 3 to 5 years, insulin prices in the U.S. are just going nuts, which is, you know, the argument always is a new drug costs a lot of money to bring to market, which is actually true, but insulin's not a new drug.
Yeah.
Like it is kind of bananas how... you know, a drug can be 10 times more expensive south of the border than they are here.
Especially when it's a life-saving drug. Like this is an everyday thing you need to have.
Well, but I would argue if I was a drug company that, you know, I don't care how life-saving it is, you know, how hard was it to bring it to market? But you can't make those arguments with insulin because, it was invented in Canada, yeah. Banting and Best, University of Toronto, and it's been around for close to 100 years now. This is not new. There's nothing new about it. It's just almost, you know, charge what you can and see what you get away with. And it's a little bonkers.
Well, again, going back to David Crosby as the patient, we've been reading some literature lately that discusses how diabetics, cannabis is affecting diabetics, and they're finding what diabetics tend to use less insulin. It's the metabolism of the insulin. Somehow the endocannabinoid system's involved with that.
Yeah, no, it's, and still on my list of future people to get a hold of. But yeah, I was even reading a little blurb, and it really was a how cannabis is hurting people blurb.
Yeah.
And it turned out it wasn't. And one of the specific things they talked about is people using cannabis tend to weigh less. And this is, you know, two groups of people where so they tend to weigh less. And like you said, tend to use less of if they're diabetic, of their medications. So I don't think we know yet exactly what it is, especially for type 2 diabetics, that cannabis is doing positively, but there sure seems to be something. And I don't know if we know why. You know, it could be anything from Dr. Shelley's quote, like, you know, cannabis being the great, makes you not want to do other things, like...
Demotivator.
Demotivator or great distractor. That's the word. Great distractor. So is it just distracting you from reaching for your bag of chips, or are one of the cannabinoids or a few of them actually reducing how hungry you are?
Yeah. We've got so many more articles and so many more people to interview. It's funny, you know, people say to me, I don't know what they're saying to you, but, well, what are you going to do when you run out of topics, you know, with this podcast?
Never going to happen.
It's not happening. I mean, we're 2.5-3 years into this project, and my storyboard is still full. I mean, we're going back into time to get some of those stories I wanted 2 years ago. I mean, David Crosby was on my storyboard 2 years ago, but it was more of a dream than anything else. Dreams come true, apparently. But I mean, the other interview we're doing today—we're here on a Sunday in our studio, and we're putting together a whole group of, well, I guess two. That's a group.
A group of two.
Of podcasts today, and putting David Crosby, and the other one is Linda, Dr. Linda Belle-Neves, and we're going to be talking about her. These are two storyboard ideas that go back 2.5 years ago. So we haven't. I mean, I still got another 2 years of stories to come.
Yeah, no, it's been great. So any other final things about the Mighty Cross brand or what he's doing that way that sort of grabbed your attention?
Well, you know what? That's the interesting thing. This is how we actually got the line on David Crosby was through the Mighty Cross. Sure enough, they got back to me and it was like, oh, now what? Now I get to talk to David Crosby. So that was that. The next choice I have is what music to showcase. The guy's got 50 years of music.
Yeah, well, this is just going to be a 50-hour-long podcast. You're okay with that, right?
You know, I could talk about this man. I've read his biographies. I've been in touch with him, like I say, a gobsmacked schoolboy, just a fanboy. So choosing his music, right now, David Crosby, for those fans out there that know this and for those that don't, he's in a huge creative wave. I mean, if you look at David Crosby's music, he hasn't been prolific for many reasons. One is his Reefer Madness stage and his drug addictions, but he's now lucid and using cannabis creatively. He's put out 4 or 5 albums in the last 4 or 5 years. In the interview, I think I stepped on him, but at some point in the interview, he says he's got another album coming.
Oh, we got another one coming.
Yeah. He's got another one coming. And he's writing most of this music, Trevor. Like, I mean, David Crosby, as he said in the Remember My Name documentary we watched, he's the only one of the four of the supergroup, Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, that didn't have a hit single, right? So he's doing a lot of traveling, and he's got 4 albums out. Great music. He's playing with a bunch of young people. And I want to respect him as a singer-songwriter because ultimately my musical taste tends to go to singer-songwriters. Early influence, Crosby, Stills, Nash, Young, all singer-songwriters, right? So, David, if you're listening, I made a choice here, and I think you'll appreciate why I made this choice of the music. And I think I'm making the same reasons as you put it on the album. The song does not need an introduction. But what I want you to focus on is this man is 77 years old, and he's singing with a group of young people, and his instrument, his voice is so on. It is so on that I chose an old song done again. So you'll recognize the song. If anybody from the era will recognize the song, but please appreciate the song was recorded in 2019. This version, okay? So I'm choosing this song.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm choosing this song for David's voice. And I apologize, David, that I'm not showcasing one of your songs, but I think you'll appreciate why I'm playing the song. Renee, let's spin this one.
Well, time to blow this joint. Like the show? Let us know. We're Reefer Madness on Instagram and Facebook, at Reefer Madness on Twitter, or head over to the website at reefermed.ca to find out what we're all about and what's coming up next. Talk to you later.
Well, I came upon a child of God. He was walking along the road. I asked him, where are you going? And this he told. Yasker's farm, gonna join in a rock and roll band, gonna get back to the land and set my soul free. We are stardust, golden, and we've got to get ourselves back to the garden.
I'm talking to David Crosby. David Crosby's talking to me, man.